Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. You're listening to Up North News.
The social media post is seeking help from anybody. It says, I left my front door open and my Roomba just went out and I can't find it. What are the consequences of this? It has no natural predators. The response came back, it'll be dead soon. Nature abhors a vacuum. With that, welcome back to the third hour of Up North News for this Monday, August 29th. I'm Pat Quitelow. Luke Mathers is over there. Before we get to talking about how the Brewers managed to salvage things, I'd rather take you to a different baseball game. This one involving the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers, the Brewers Advanced Class A affiliate that plays in Appleton. From J.R. Radcliffe of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, they had wrestling night in Appleton on Saturday night. And conveniently enough, the game ended in a scrum with the Lansing Lugnuts. With two outs in the ninth, Lugnuts left fielder Lazaro Armateros was hit with a 1-2 pitch near the shoe top. On his way to first base, he appeared to get into an exchange of words with the Appleton pitcher Carlos Morales, who took steps toward Armateros as the batter was heading up the baseline. Armenteros then threw his helmet at Morales and started taking swings, and the players poured out onto the field. Appleton lost 3-2 on wrestling night. Kurt Angle was the wrestler on hand who was signing autographs. Does not appear that Kurt Angle took part in it because this fight apparently was real. So we didn't have anything like that at American Family Field over the weekend. But I will say that once again, Luke asked me Friday night if I was ready to press the panic button, and I was ready to smash that thing when the Brewers lost. That was killer.
It was, not gonna lie, so frustrating to watch that Friday night loss because they got the bases loaded and they could have tied it or just walked off, and they didn't. And it was very frustrating. It was nice to see, though, that the next two games, Christian Yelich, I believe, went 4-for-5 on Saturday and 3-for-4 yesterday. So that's some excellent hitting by Yelly, who has been in need of some. Like you said, they only they scored 9, but they only won by 2 because they gave up 7 runs, and they almost lost it last night.
Almost again yesterday. It was a fun game to watch, and it was great, all the attention that they gave to Garrett Mitchell. And trust me, we have seen attention paid to people just called up to the big leagues and they flame out. It doesn't work. But hopefully that's not the case with Garrett Mitchell, who batted 9th in the order, something he probably hasn't done for a while. And he seems like he's up rather quickly since he was their top pick in 2020. But of course, now I can't find the number of games. It's something like only 132 games in the minors, but before he was called up. And of course, I'm looking at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel website for this, and their website is
atrocious.
The worst.
Atrocious.
Just atrocious. So I can't tell you down at the end of the article as the page takes forever to load. But he did have that big 2 RBI hit, and I think it's going to be a nice moment. I did a little screen capture of him and Yelich, you know, after the Yelich home run, was it, that brought him in? And that was...
Yeah, because Mitchell hit there were runners on second and third. Mitchell got a double. Mm-hmm. Or maybe on first and second. No, second and third, because Rowdy Tellez was on third, and Rowdy couldn't get home on the previous hit before Mitchell. So Mitchell hit in Rowdy and Wong, I believe, who were on second and third. He was at a stand-up double, essentially, and then the next batter was Yelly, and he had a 2-run homer yesterday.
And it was, you know, nice moment there that, Yelich still has plenty left, but we also know which side of the curve that he's on. It's just, you know, fact of life. And so if by chance this all works out with Garrett Mitchell, then, you know, that'll be a nice development. So fingers crossed. I thought that Sophia Minert for Bally Sports did a fantastic interview with the mom. And this is, again, one of those weird things of getting older now, is that they talk to the mom, and the mom, I'm sure, is much younger than me. And yet, you know, she's the mom of the big league baseball player, all proud and everything up there. And I was very happy for the family because you obviously pour a lot into it. And it's exacerbated by, she noted, the fact that he's a type 1 diabetic and, you know, has, you know, health hurdles that you have to be mindful of, and still managed to do all this. So all of this goodwill that I'm sprinkling on the Brewers right now is going to turn instead to raining fire if they cannot sweep the Pirates in these next three games at American Family Field. There's no excuse. I already said they had to go 6-for-6 against the Cubs and Pirates. They're not going to do that now, but they have to get these next three. There's just no way around it.
Yeah, I have a feeling that they need all three because the Cardinals are still red hot too. So if they want to be able to keep it, and Padres, I think it's going to come down to the Brewers versus the Padres for that wild card spot. And it is,
and Hader
going
again,
to be interesting.
Over the weekend, you know, imploded. I can't feel totally bad now because we're in this race with the Padres, but wow.
I'm not going to send any hatred or anything his way because I got to imagine that.
No. It's all sympathy. But anyway, we'll save that for later in the season. Right now, we just got to get through these with Pittsburgh. We'll be back in just a bit. You're up north. Monday morning. It's still a little cloudy out here over Lake Wasota, but apparently we're going to get ourselves a very sunny rest of the week, and I'm going to hold them to it. I did a screenshot on my phone of a particular weather app that said the odds of rain from this afternoon through next week Tuesday, every single day, it says 0%, 0%, 0%. Now, the odds are pretty good that in a day or two or three, just in time for Labor Day weekend, it's going to be, a 20% chance of rain, 30%. You know, the system got here faster than we expected. And so I think it's, again, to lure us into that false sense of security that if you want to camp, you can. But as we all know, you know, there's three holiday weekends over the summer where people do most of their camping. And I don't know why, because the weather is just never going to cooperate with it. But right now, it says yes. So I hope it got the rain out of its system, because I think we got probably 5 inches again here. When we'd gotten 5 inches about a week, you know, earlier last week, we got, you know, 3+ between Saturday and Sunday here. So I think we're good. I think we're good for a little bit. It is, you can talk about ending with a whimper instead of a bang. The Gableman investigation, quote unquote, into the 2020 election has quietly come to an end with the subpoenas that he had issued early on. A former state Supreme Court justice threatening to jail the mayors of Madison, Green Bay, and others, you know, issuing these subpoenas with these outrageous demands about, you know, testifying in secret and things like that. That, you know, these mayors and others rightly stood up, you know, to that and said, no, this will not stand. And Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who fired Gableman a couple of weeks back on Friday, withdrew the subpoenas because they are put out on behalf of the GOP-controlled legislature. So that pretty much marks the end of the 14-month journey that yielded no evidence of election fraud. And that should be enough right there. But as we heard from State Senator Jeff Smith in an earlier hour this morning, he still gets stopped, I would say accosted, my word, not his, by people who still want to claim that that there was something wrong with the 2020 election, even though there wasn't, even though there has still been no evidence of any widespread fraud. And again, none, except people saying, oh, it's out there, you're just missing it. The only thing there's been evidence of, as the January 6th committee continues to pile up, is the evidence that Donald Trump tried to steal the election. Now, I know in recent polling, the notes that came from it said that it's completely fair to note that Donald Trump, you know, tried to alter the election or tried to delay it, that some people don't like the term steal. But let's not mince words. We know what this was, and we know how it came to a violent and deadly climax on January 6th with an attempt, with an attack on Congress as it was counting the electoral ballots. The only funny business about the 2020 election was coming from Donald Trump and his campaign. So that should have been enough, but instead we got the Gableman investigation. Now the subpoenas have been withdrawn. Attorney General Josh Call reacted by saying, look, last fall, I called for this fake investigation to be shut down. We challenged several subpoenas. While it shouldn't have taken nearly this long, I'm glad the investigation has ended and all the subpoenas have been withdrawn. President Biden won Wisconsin by nearly 21,000 votes. That has withstood recounts, state lawsuits, federal lawsuits, and now the Gableman investigation. And that should be the end of it, because we have to be focusing not just on this election, but the fact that the winners of this election are going to have an impact on the next presidential election in 2024.
See, Pat, when you send me my gift later this week, I have to return a gift for you and send you the Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, because the monster does not go quietly into the night. The monster does not die easily. He continues to live, I believe, beyond the doctor in the novel.
Yes.
And therefore, I don't think this is the end of it, but it should. It should be, but we're still going to hear more of this.
No, it should be, but this monster has been unleashed, and it's been unleashed on the minds of sadly too many unsuspecting Americans who are caught up in a right-wing media bubble and are exposed to these kind of, you know, lies over and over again. And perhaps as importantly, it's infected far too many politicians who are rather blatant about how they would like to, for lack of any better word, rig the next election, make it easier for Republican legislators. For example, Tim Michaels, the Republican candidate for governor, has called for disbanding the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Senator Ron Johnson has called on legislators to ignore the Wisconsin Elections Commission. He says you don't have to disband it, but he says legislators have the power to oversee at least federal elections on their own, and that they should take hold of that. That doesn't get nearly the traction that it should. And I understand that by and large, voters want to hear about, you know, things that affect them. They want to hear about economic issues. They want to hear how Ron Johnson very nearly did indeed cost people's lives by spreading misinformation about COVID and the vaccine and such. But I don't think that you don't mention the fact that Ron Johnson has been a peddler of disinformation and of Russian disinformation about American elections, and that he has said blatantly that the Wisconsin legislature should take more steps to allow it, controlled by Republican politicians, to determine who won Wisconsin's electoral votes rather than the voters. That the legislators themselves should get to do that. And that is something that, as you said, long after the monster is gone, whether it's Gableman, whether it's Trump himself, there is now this feeling that it's okay to question election integrity, knowing it's not true, or at least having no evidence that it is true, and knowing the damage that it's doing. And it's something that the only antidote to it is voting to defeat people, you know, who either spread election disinformation or who were present on the Capitol grounds during the January 6th insurrection, you know, whatever their role may be, the fact that they wanted to go to Washington at Donald Trump's behest to, you know, when he said it will be wild, you know, they knew he wasn't talking about, you know, a little princess tea party with pinkies up. This was not what January 6th was ever going to be. And as a result, this election this year is going to, you know, have a major role in the 2024 elections. And it's going to have a major role in, again, our own things at home, like tax policy. Do we pay higher taxes? Do people who had their student loans forgiven have to pay state income taxes on it? Republicans suddenly are pro-tax by wanting student loan borrowers to pay taxes. They want property taxes to go up for public schools. And as we noted, on the ballot this November, in at least 50 school districts, will be nearly $2 billion in referenda requests for higher local property taxes, even as state Republicans sit on a $5 billion surplus. These are tremendous stakes. These are not, again, not small potatoes. And it should get people questioning how they voted in the past without feeling like there's no reason. We can disagree and say, I don't agree with how you voted in 2020, but that doesn't make them a bad person. There should not be necessarily a level of shame. There should simply be a conversation, as Jeff Smith told us earlier. In that conversation, or as Kelly Westland mentioned earlier, or as some of our other guests have mentioned when they're knocking on doors, these conversations show that people are wondering if they have supported a party that has gone too far, that has become too full of itself. And if there's one thing that has always been true about American politics, it's that voters inevitably punish a party when they perceive that that party has gotten too big for its britches. And there's really no better way to put that. Voters know when they feel like one party has swung too far and needs to be reined in. And you see that in pendulum swing elections from the past. I, for one, did not agree with voters in 2010 who thought that Democrats had swung too far and needed to be reined in. But after the Affordable Care Act vote and a whole lot of other things that were done and a lot of things that were said, true and untrue, that's how voters felt. And the potential is definitely there for that to happen this time around. The conventional wisdom is getting less conventional all the time, that this is necessarily going to be something where Republicans have a clear glide path to victory. And some polling, Luke, I think there was a new Republican-leaning poll this week that, again, indicated how close the races are for both Senate and governor.
Yes, there was, I believe, I forget the exact name. I can go find it real quick because I know where to look. But there was a Republican pollster that did polling here in Wisconsin, has incumbent governor Tony Evers ahead by, I believe, half a percentage point in the gubernatorial race. And in the U.S. Senate race, I believe Mandela Barnes was leading by 2 percentage points in that one.
It does lead to this related topic, and that is you know, people that vote for both parties on a ballot. There's not a lot of them, but sometimes they can make a difference, especially here in Wisconsin. We are a state that has elected Tammy Baldwin and has elected Ron Johnson. Now, those two are not on the ballot the same year, but it just goes to show that, again, we are a closely divided state. And that while it's a small number, there are people who will vote for, say, a Republican for governor and a Democrat for U.S. Senate or something else. It is entirely possible that the incumbents, Republican Ron Johnson and Democrat Tony Evers, both win simply because just enough voters decide they like the incumbent, or vice versa, that they vote against the incumbent. And instead, Tim Michaels and Mandela Barnes both win. It is entirely possible. And again, you can't fault voters who want change if they have learned just enough that they want to vote that way. The only thing that I would really like to guard against is people voting strictly based on what they hear from one particular channel. We all need a better balanced media diet than that. We'll have more after this. You're up north.
Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, this is Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
I am guessing this is the Twin Cities based on the poster who put up on social media. Two photos, and her caption is, "Just missed getting hit by a falling S from the Menards sign." And if you've ever looked over any Menards, you know, it's got Menards spelled out in great big letters. And the photo shows the S at the end of Menards had fallen from the front of the building onto the sidewalk below. And she says she just missed getting hit. And one of the responses reminds her that when a letter from a Menards sign falls on you, mail in your medical bills for an 11% rebate. All in Menards cash, of course. This is Up North News. I am trying to prattle on here because with each moment that I can visit with Luke and you, it's a moment that I don't have to be reminded that my home is currently being invaded and that the sound of crickets is only going to get louder. And I don't mean the kind that greet jokes like what I just told. I mean the real kind. This time every year, they start to get the idea that maybe this is where they want to be come fall. And so many of them end up going for a swim down to our septic tank. But you know, prior to that is the chirping that comes from either behind a piece of furniture, or sometimes you can't get at the little buggers because we have floor vents for the heating, and they're in the ducts right below the floor, and you can hear their melodious tones.
Great. I don't think I've experienced any of them coming inside yet, but I definitely have crickets out there. I sleep with the windows open and everything, so we air out the house pretty regularly, sleeping with the windows open all summer long for the most part. And the crickets are very, very noisy in our neighborhood still, and therefore I hear them every night, every morning. I'm a pretty early riser, so there's still crickets going on when I wake up. And when they start to get inside, then I might get a little bit more upset rather than just hearing them from out the window.
Yeah, I think that it's happened to us enough now that if we actually do hear one in the middle of the night, you know, that's maybe made it to, you know, the living room or something, we can sleep through it because, again, it's part of the environment. But boy, the first couple of times, you know, as a homeowner, when you realize there's a critter in there and it's extra loud compared to the crickets outside, it'll definitely get your attention. It's not the worst problem in the world to have. We've had other years where they're not ladybugs. What are they? Little Asian beetles or something, but they look like ladybugs where we've had years where many of them have tried to, you know, come in to the house. So it's just part of living out in the rural parts of the woods. It's not like living in town where you're dealing with, you know, whether it's rats or squirrels in cities. Holy cow. I remember visiting my daughter once when she was going to the University of Minnesota, and I walked past a garbage can on the curb, and a squirrel just jumped out. It was just like, you know, I was getting too close to the garbage can for the squirrel thought I was coming after his dinner. And that's not something I'd care to have a fight with. I'll watch that on Christmas Vacation when the squirrel comes out of the tree, but I don't care to live that.
Are you sure it wasn't a gopher? It could have been a gopher.
It was not a gopher. It wasn't golden, and it didn't have that ridiculous little maroon and gold, you know, shirt that it wears. It's actually the only thing that works against when we have Kristen Lyerly on every week is, you know, that we have to hear about, you know, gophers in not the good way. We mentioned polling right before the break, and you actually found the latest polling, which, again, I'm going to give my usual disclaimer. We do not get caught up in polls and horse races here. These are a snapshot at a moment, and they are fallible like anything else. But what you got the details on it now.
Yeah, it's a temperature check at best is what I like to refer to it as. But it was the Trafalgar Group was the poll we were referencing earlier. I believe that's what you and I were both looking at over the weekend. And I had the margins right. I just didn't know the exact numbers, but now I have the exact numbers in front of me. And the right-wing or right-leaning pollster, so we're going to preface that as well, but the poll shows it was conducted from August 22nd to the 25th, and it has incumbent Governor Tony Evers at 48% even, and construction businessman Tim Michaels at 47.5%. So only a half a percentage difference between the two of them, with 2.7% undecided and another 1.8% saying they would vote for a different candidate other than Evers or Michaels. And so that was the Trafalgar Group's polling on the gubernatorial race here in Wisconsin, and they also released polling for the senatorial race, showing with 49.4% the, I was going to say the other Mandela, because that's his Twitter handle and what they got here, but that's Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes is polling at that 49.4, with incumbent Senator Ron Johnson at 47.1. So about 2.3, almost 2.5 point difference between the incumbent senator and his challenger, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, with 3.5% still undecided on that one, Pat. So somehow we've got some undecided voters that still haven't made up their mind yet. But I attribute that mostly to, you know, people not quite paying attention, I guess, yet. It's still Labor Day, and you got that old adage that people don't start paying attention to politics until after the Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, there's plenty that don't. But I have to admit, I'm not familiar with this poll, and I'm a little leery only because in Pennsylvania last week, the Republican candidate, Doug Mastriano, was sharing a new poll that actually showed him doing much better than, you know, previously. And so he was retweeting the poll, and then other people were retweeting the poll, and he claimed it showed momentum. And then it was later learned the poll was a fake that a high school student had created and sent in, and you know, Mastriano, you know, put it out there without any vetting whatsoever. So this is the social media world that we live in.
It's now got that,
check everything.
That big mo though. It's the momentum. I think the Trafalgar Group is a little bit better known than some high schooler kind of making up the numbers, but we do have a candidate in this cycle that just he's ignoring all the polling and he's just going with his feelings, and that's his feelings.
Tim Michaels says he believes in his heart that he's ahead, so you know he's got that going for him. Friend of mine puts up this tweet overnight. It's not exactly breaking news at this point, but as I arrive home at 1 a.m. after another canceled flight, the fourth in 2 weeks, and sprinting across the whole airport to catch the last flight home after missing a second connection, let me tell you, air travel is a real bloodbath right now. And it's true. I like flying. I like traveling, but I wouldn't dare right now until the airlines get their act together. But, you know, even though the airlines are to blame for making flying so unpleasant, they're overbooking flights, they're stuffing passengers into tiny seats. But it is noted this morning in an advice column in the Washington Post by Natalie Compton, Nathan Diller, and Hannah Sampson, that it is also on travelers not to make a bad situation worse. Now, we're not ever going to go back to the time when flying was a glamorous affair, that you only traveled in, you know, suits and dresses, and there was, you know, formal dining, roast beef was carved, you know, in the aisle at your seat. That's not coming back. But that doesn't mean that the experience has to be entirely cattle car like. And so they offer up a refresher on in-flight etiquette. And I wish to share this because, again, I do travel a lot, and I feel this needs to be told a little bit more often than it is. And so I've got this megaphone, and I hope that on behalf of everybody else out there saying amen, that we can get fewer people making jerks of themselves. So look, first off, don't be part of the mob. So they write, you're sitting at the gate doing your best to exist in peace. But for some people, it doesn't matter what time boarding begins. They're going to descend on the boarding zone like a pack of hyenas encroaching on a fresh carcass. Don't be part of a civilized member of society. Wait till your boarding group is called. It's great to be early for your flight and ready to go, but you know, you're not going to get on the plane any sooner by being part of a mob. So don't do it. Once you're shuffling down the aisle, do remember that your fellow travelers have tender skulls just like you, and don't bunk them with your luggage. I am always amazed at people that are that discourteous. Another real pet peeve of mine is somebody that gets to their seat and then just stands there in the aisle, taking their own sweet time, putting something up above or putting something down below, when, you know, you can do that once everybody is on, but before you take off, but, you know, everybody wants to, you know, wants to just treat it like it's their car, and the rest of you are not. And it's next piece of advice, keep your shoes on. You know, yeah, flying can be uncomfortable sometimes, but do we really need people walking barefoot through the airplanes? It's disgusting. If nobody's told you that, and by the way, notes here,
that's gross.
For the love of God, don't go barefoot to the lavatory on the plane. I'm sorry. I know some of you might be having a late breakfast or an early lunch, but it happens, and somebody's got to say something. So we're going to do it. We're saying it right here. Don't do that. Think before you recline. I mean, it has literally driven people to violence on airplanes. It is true, they write, that you paid for your seat and should be able to use it as you'd like, but there is some etiquette in not flinging your seat back 2 inches without making sure that the person behind you isn't either going to get, you know, a drink splashed on them, or, you know, there's a kid behind them, or whatever the case may be. If you're packing food to bring with you, maybe don't bring the egg salad. You know, there's something you should maybe have at the airport restaurant before you get on the plane. And again, this happens. I'll love on a car trip, I like a bag of Funyuns. I'm not going to bring a bag of Funyuns on an airplane. And yet, that's what it's going to do. It says, let others mask in peace. And that is a relatively new one. But I really want to throw out an amen on that one, because, again, there's a lot of pushback to people wearing masks from a certain contingent that says that that's all wokeness and that's all just a matter of woke behavior. And remember, one of the base mottos of this show is woke just means, forgive the language, don't be an ass. That's it. That's all woke means, folks. And so let somebody have their mask on. It means nothing to you. Maybe you disagree with them, but you don't need to say anything. You just don't. You just don't. And finally, we end as we began, with the mob. Wait your turn to get off the plane. And waiting your turn is something we learned in kindergarten. And yet on not every flight, but on lots of flights, there are people that just feel like they are some kind of a running back, or more likely the tackle for a running back, just trying to, you know, move people out and create a hole. And there's no reason for this, folks. There's just not. Again, it's not the plane's not on fire. You know, there, and even if it is, by the way, getting off orderly is going to keep more people alive than being a mob. I get that, you know, connecting flights, and the airlines are doing a terrible job of helping people, you know, make their connecting flights with all of the increased delays. But you're not the only one on any given flight with a connection to make. So I hope that that these few moments provided a little public service to everybody, because God knows we need it. We're very lucky here in Wisconsin that we have a couple of smaller airports where you can begin flying. I have flown out of Eau Claire, out of Madison, out of Wausau, and out of Milwaukee, which is also, you know, compared to like O'Hare and Twin Cities, you know, relatively small. I love those because, again, the TSA lines sometimes are non-existent. And then you're done. You know, you get to Chicago, the cities, wherever, and it's easy to transfer from there. So we really need to count our blessings that we can do that where possible. But otherwise, It's a circus out there, folks, but there's no reason for you to be one of the monkeys. We will wrap up our visit here coming up after this break. Just this reminder that if you want to get our newsletter every day, go to upnorthnewswi.com, click on newsletter in the top banner, or search for our social media posts on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter by searching for Up North News WI. We'll be back. I forget that sometimes the generation gap between us means I need to be more specific in my song requests. When I ask for James Taylor's You've Got a Friend, and I get Randy Newman's You've Got a Friend in Me from Toy Story, world of difference. World of difference.
My bad. The same thing. I said, what about the Randy Newman version? You said any version.
I thought maybe Randy Newman did a version of it till I hear the Toy Story soundtrack come up. Look, both messages are fine. We'll get to why in a little bit, but I appreciate that. That's good. Ron Johnson has a friend in Wisconsin Truth Pack. And so I want to say again, and I say it frequently so that you might remind people as well, that there are a lot of ads out there benefiting Ron Johnson and hitting on Mandela Barnes that are coming out from Wisconsin Truth Pack. That's not the Ron Johnson campaign. That's a couple of billionaires in Wisconsin, the Ulines and Hendricks, who together have reaped at least tens of millions of dollars in lower taxes, these billionaires, because of Ron Johnson's sweetheart deal that he put in the 2017 tax bill. And so as a result, these billionaires have spent millions to create Wisconsin Truth Pack in order to make Mandela Barnes look like a scary person, tell lies, and all that to help their boy, Ron Johnson, win election. So I just want to, again, let you know, there's all these packs have all these, you know, names like Puppies and Kittens and All America Pack and what have you, America First, Only America, American Dreams, blah, blah, blah. So just keep that in mind. Wisconsin Truth Pack is the couple of billionaires who got a sweetheart tax deal that means there's less there for roads and schools and healthcare and everything else. Now they're going to throw out the word socialist a lot. They love socialist and they, you know, communist and all that. Boy, you refer to, you know, Trump or anybody as being even lightly involved in fascist behavior. Oh my goodness. The pearl clutching that goes on, you know, to think that after over a decade of throwing around socialist, without using it correctly and really knowing what it is, now suddenly, you use fascist. How could you be so mean? Now, that said, two Democratic socialists are poised to join the assembly. And the article from WisPolitics notes that will be the first time that's happened in over 30 years. Both are in the Milwaukee area. Ryan Clancy and Darren Madison are unopposed in November. They were both endorsed by the Milwaukee chapter of Democratic Socialists of America, the largest socialist organization in the country. They'll become the first with DSA membership since Dismas Becker in 1983 to 1985. Clancy currently serves on the Milwaukee County Board. He ran unopposed in the primary and makes note that, again, his platform, endorsed by the Democratic Socialists of America, is not really that radical. It's not, he says to WisPolitics. In fact, it's wildly popular. Workers' rights, paid parental leave, very practical, popular policies. As it turns out, he says, there's a pretty wide gulf between what Fox News says socialism is and what people like him are actually doing, which is fighting on behalf of working class people and ensuring that they have a seat at the table in all levels of decision making. And Darren Madison adds, it creates a pathway for folks throughout the state We've been the home of working class folks for a long time, and I think folks see a new path forward through the victories we've been able to achieve, and more folks will step up. So again, you have people so frustrated by what the right wing has been doing for the past decade, and they're being called socialists anyway, that if that particular label is something that can be turned around and actually look moderate compared to the extreme behavior we're now seeing from the right wing, well, then you can certainly see why that is happening, why you see the first two candidates that way. And they may not be the last. I mean, remember, the Milwaukee area has had three socialist mayors over the years. And the whole reason that they got elected in an era where socialism was also, you know, denigrated, was they were the ones who were basically running as fix the damn roads candidates. You know, back then, a century ago, it wasn't so much the roads as it was the fact that there were still open sewers everywhere in Milwaukee. And they said, we can do better than that. And people voted for them. And you know what? The sewers got fixed and improved and things got done. So I know that socialism is a label that's going to be thrown out a lot, but and now there's actual Democratic Socialist of America candidates on the ballot. But again, it's less about the label and more about the person's positions, values, and work ethic. If you get to that, we're going to have a higher caliber of elected officials at all levels of government. I'm going to close noting that this is a little bit out of my league because I did not know Wausau Channel 9 anchor Nina Pacholke, and I certainly don't know her circumstance, and I'm going to work very hard not to speculate. But in noting that she had passed away suddenly over the weekend at the age of 27, they note in the story from Channel 9 that if you or someone you know is struggling with mental health, please reach out. You are not alone. And it points to resources. Wausau Mayor Katie Rosenberg notes that on Twitter this morning that as a community and as individuals, we've been through a lot. Sometimes it feels overwhelming or that there's nowhere to go. It's okay to recognize those feelings that you're not okay and reach out for help. And from Wisconsin Public Radio, a note from last week that Wisconsin's new 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is already seeing a big increase in callers. The call center, managed by Family Services of Northeast Wisconsin, used to average 29,000 calls a year. With the changeover to the three-digit 988 Lifeline phone number, the center received 6,000 calls just in July. And that's from something that launched on July 16th. The center answered 4,400 of those. The remaining were sent to a backup center. And the crisis services coordinator for the Department of Health Services says it's because 988 is easier to remember. It makes it easier for people to reach out and ask for help. And she says, we've been seeing this increase in contacts month to month. It really says something about the need that people are feeling better about reaching out for resources or just to talk to somebody. And that's where we're going to end things, just at that. If you need to talk to somebody, reach out. We are such a divisive world sometimes, but nobody should ever be alone. Nobody should ever feel that they are not cared for. And there's people that you don't know that actually care about you more than you might suspect. So reach out and ask. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. Take care. Oh, yeah, yeah. You've got a friend.